Hi, and welcome back to the Childhood Development Initiative's Restorative Practice podcast, where we talk all things RP. For this second season, we resume visiting communities and organisations to collect stories from practitioners around Ireland. We talk to young people, teachers, lecturers, youth and community workers, and restorative practices trainers to gather their insights on the impact of RP in their life and work. Each episode is focusing either on a place with several voices or on a practitioner. If you are not familiar with restorative practices, the restorative approach, the restorative questions, and the work CDI does, you can listen to the first episode of season one of our podcast series where it is all explained.
Hi, I'm Dorothy Danieu, Restorative Practice Quality Specialist for CDI, and I'm delighted to be back on the road for this second season of Circles of Connection. For this episode, I actually went to Childhood Development Initiative in Tala West to meet with Claire Casey, the RP Program Manager, and Josh Best, the RP Program Coordinator. We talked about the implementation of RP in CDI as an organization, what impact it had, and what it meant to work in a restorative organization. First, Claire explained how CDI got involved in restorative practice and from there became a restorative organization.
I'm Claire Casey. I'm the Restorative Practices Program Manager here at the Childhood Development Initiative, CDI.
I'm George Best, and I am the Restorative Practices Program Coordinator here at CDI.
How did we get involved in this whole thing? So we introduced restorative practices as part of our community safety initiative in 2010. At the time, we were testing out an evidence-based approach to community safety called the Community Safety Initiative. And frankly, it just wasn't working. It was something that had been developed in England, but it didn't really translate to Tala. And we heard about restorative practice at a conference in February 2010 in Dublin Castle, where there was a presentation from a couple of people who were involved with the International Institute for Restorative Practices and were talking about how the difference that introducing restorative practice had made for a couple of schools in Hull, the city of Hull in England. And it was a very big light bulb moment for myself and my CEO, Marion Quinn, because we sat there and we were like looking at each other going, this would be absolutely perfect for the Community Safety Initiative. That was in February. In May that year, we brought a couple of people over. We brought the person, Mark Finnis, who had presented, was one of the people who presented at that conference, brought him over to Dublin, to Tala, to meet people. We brought people from all of the agencies that we were engaged with through the Community Safety Initiative, and also to a meeting to hear about restorative practices. And we invited some other people who weren't on the steering committee that were kind of crucial, like school principals and so on. And we also had a second meeting for residents that we were working with on the Community Safety Initiative, a group of about 17 or 18 residents. People heard about it and thought it was brilliant. They agreed to setting up a management committee. We had a management committee on restorative practices for the first 2 to 3 years of the work. And we went into contract with the International Institute for Restorative Practices for them to send trainers over from England to deliver training here in Tala. And the training basically started in July 2010. Between then, we targeted the management committee targeted getting 1,000 people trained over the first 2 years in Tala, and there were target groups, like there was schools, there was youth services, community centres, Garda Diversion, so on, so the guards and so on, local authority. Over that first 2 years, and it was evaluated over that first 2 years. There was also a plan around, and it all happened around training local trainers to build capacity for us to deliver our own training here in Ireland. So in the first 2 years, about 850 people in TALA were trained across all those target groups I mentioned. 22 people were trained up as trainers, myself and Joyce, who I was working with at the time, included two of the staff here. And the evaluation was completed. And the evaluation report at the time, just thinking now, at the time, CDI as an organization was undergoing change because we were losing some funding, some government funding because of the crash. And we were moving from being managed by managed by Atlantic Philanthropies into being managed by Pubble. So there was big changes happening. There was downsizing in terms of the number of people, and some staff had left, were let go or left. And there was changeover. During the course of that, we continued the work with restorative practices, continued through the Community Safety Initiative. We were testing it out on pilot sites in a couple of areas. And that there was a 1 year evaluation of that. The two evaluations showed that a couple of things, right? It showed that the people who did the training, the first evaluation of the training program itself, showed that people who did the training felt much more confident about handling conflict, had much better outcomes from conflict that they were involved in, and were significantly more confident about having good relationships with work and service users. There was also a couple of case studies that showed very positive outcomes in youth services and in local authority settings, that were published as part of the evaluation. That was that. And then the second one was of the Community Safety Initiative on the pilot sites using restorative practices, showed that it had been really successful in reducing antisocial behaviour on one pilot site in particular. So those two evaluations meant that funding continued for the restorative practices here in CDI when we were moving into the new structure. And my job went from part-time to full-time, and my job title was changed from Community Engagement Coordinator to Restorative Practices Coordinator because it had just taken off in the community. By the end of 2012, discussions here in CDI started around, if we're out there in the community talking about restorative practices, we need to be walking the talk here in the organisation. Because we were asking organisations to declare themselves as restorative organisations, and if we were doing that outside, we needed to be doing it ourselves. So we were moving towards doing that. So we started discussions among the staff here, and it was about an 18-month process, to be honest, Dorothy, because people were like, well, yeah, you know, okay. And after, it sounds interesting, you know, Claire, but how about this and what about that and what if this happens and what if that happens? And of course, then basically kind of did training with the staff. So did the training course with the staff, and they all loved the training. They all thought that was great. That was fine. But then they were still like, there were some people who were like, and fair enough, like they had good questions. Like, if we declare ourselves a restorative organization, will everybody out there think there's loads of conflict in CDI? You know, that kind of stuff was discussed. And how will it be, you know, where will my rights be, and rights-based stuff around employee rights, and, you know, if we write this into our disciplinary code, what does that mean? And do I have to be bound by a restorative agreement if there's a restorative meeting, do I have to be bound by an agreement? And if I can't do it, does that mean where does that sit? So all of that got thrashed out, and Ultimately, obviously, agreed that we would declare ourselves a restorative organisation, and in order to do that, to get ready to do that, we had a process of rewriting policies, and in particular, the disciplinary policy, the grievance policy, and the complaints policy. So the first step in any of those now would be to, people would have the option of having a restorative conversation, and if that doesn't work out, having a restorative meeting. Then if none of those work out, then you go to the formal process. The other thing that got changed over around the same time, I think, maybe a little bit later, is our employee contracts. So employee contracts explicitly state that we're a restorative organisation and that people coming to work here will have to do the introduction to restorative practices as part of their induction programme. And we now have a kind of an induction programme checklist, and RP training is on that, and our employee handbook includes a reference to it, and so on and so forth. So it's in there in the policies, and it's in the way we work as well. So we would have weekly check-ins. They were instituted in 2014. They're being reviewed at the moment, because earlier this year, when we came back out of lockdown, I think, you know, there was stuff there and needed to be discussed. We had our first physical get-together as a group of staff, all the staff and the board then as well, but all of the staff together in April this year, 2022. And there was a question raised about the usefulness and the comfort that people had with the weekly check-ins. So that came up. It came up as part of what do you need to come back comfortably into work? Because we had done this. We, as a management team, we had surveyed people about how do you feel about coming back to work? What do you need to come back to the office, and so on. And the weekly check-ins came up, got flagged as something that a few people were like, they don't really work for me. So as part of that team day, we put it on the agenda, and I facilitated a restorative circle about it. It's like, what do people like and what do people not like about them? And how will we move forward, kind of a circle. And as a result of that, we made some changes. Like, we changed them from 10 a.m. on a Monday morning to 9 a.m. on a Monday morning, because people had found it difficult. There's a fair few part-time staff in CDI. About half the staff are part-time. So part-time staff all have to work on a Monday so that we can arrange things on a Monday. So 10 o'clock could be awkward, cut into their day in terms of organising meetings with people and all of that, kind of, or attending meetings on a Monday. So that was a fine. We changed it to 9, and it's tightened up the agenda, and we explicitly nominated myself and George, as RP team would facilitate the weekly check-ins. We said we'd review it after 6 months. So the review is actually happening at the moment. We put out an anonymous survey to all the staff about the weekly check-in. So we're eagerly awaiting the results.
Then we talked about the impact it had on the organization and day-to-day work on supervision and management processes.
I think what it has done is we've become explicit about stuff that we were trying to do anyway. You know, we've become really upfront about it. We say it in all our policies. We say we strive to work in a relational way. We strive to work in a restorative way. How it's impacted really is it's given all of us a mechanism when there is an issue, because issues do arise. Gives us a mechanism that everybody's familiar with for dealing with it. So myself personally, I would have asked since 2012, or when this was agreed with the staff. So in 10 years, I guess, twice I would have asked other members of staff, can I have a restorative conversation with you? And once another member of staff has asked me that. And it's worked out great. It's been absolutely fine. I've also had a member of staff ask me for help with with framing an email to somebody that she was working with in a restorative way. And she got a much better outcome from that email than she might have otherwise, or that she thought she was going to get. And then also it's just something we had to do it, like I said earlier, in terms of walk the talk. And I just think it's made it, I like working here. I'm hoping other people like working here. I believe other people like working here. There's a member of staff who's joined recently who was working for an organization that we used to work with, and she wanted to move on from there, and she waited for a job to come up here that she could apply for because she wanted to come and work here. And I think that's because we're a restorative organization. You know, I don't think a restorative practices is about managers, and we say it in the training, it's not about managers giving up responsibility for having to make final decisions about things. I mean, it's just somebody, the buck has to stop somewhere. In terms of how it plays out here is that our supervision mechanisms are explicitly what I would consider restorative, in that they always start with the check-in with somebody at the start. They ask for people that we also take. We take a restorative approach to how we discuss work, in terms of this is what you were expected to do. How did you get there? Do you need other supports to meet that target? Where will we get those? So there would be both high expectations, but the supports are always there for people. We work as managers here. We work very hard to ensure that people know that they can access support for their work. So that's just in supervision. We have monthly team meetings. They always start with the check-in with people. We rotate the chair. We try and give people opportunities to step up into different positions that way. We've just started, we're continually trying to come up with ways to articulate it, as you say. So, for example, just in the last week, we agreed it at the management team a couple of months ago. But just in the last week, we've started a process of piloting something called action learning sets, which by any other, if you looked at them, they literally are the restorative problem solving process, right? So somebody gets to know, teams are going to be meeting together four times this year to give people opportunities to present either an issue or a goal that they're trying to reach. And other people have agreed will be there to support them, and it'll be facilitated. And people, they get 5 minutes to present their issue or their goal. And then people ask, there'll be a round of clarification questions or challenging questions or probing questions. Then solutions are going to be offered using the try method, where you try this, try that, with no discussion, and people, you know. So that's explicitly a restorative thing that we're doing. And George and I co-facilitated a workshop with the staff about it earlier this week. And gave people the choice about whether to try. And people thought this could be really interesting, and people are going to give it a go, which is great. I mean, wasn't like you have to do this. It was like, we think it's a good idea and it could be a real support to staff. And I think people got that and are going with it. And it's a pilot, and we will document it, and we will, because that's the way we do everything. You know, we'll check and see whether it works or not, review it in 12 months' time. We're never looking to trip people up. One of the things that I thought was great in that workshop the other day is a guiding belief around action learning sets is that learning is based on not knowing. Do you know? And then we want to be a learning and being explicit about you can't know everything, and you can and you need, everybody needs help from everybody else. Like that's what we're trying to do here. And it's getting there. I think it's kind of getting more embedded as years go on. But CDI as an organization does strive to be a place that's friendly with people, right? Or that is interested in people, that inclusive, right? We would make a point of trying to make people comfortable coming to the premises. I mean, I remember in the early years, like people used to come to meetings and they'd be absolutely gobsmacked that we'd have pastries or something. Do you know what I mean? But we just would make a point of people, making people feel at home. Because when people are comfortable, they work better together. I mean, it's all part of the piece. But I think when we talk about it being a restorative organization, I think it's important to note that one of the things that really is helpful about it is that we all have a clear way to name issues and deal with them when they arise, and to deal with conflicts when they arise. Because, you know, we're humans and there's always conflicts. So, I think we do conflict pretty well here in CDI. I mean, there's only one time in the entire time where we've had a restorative meeting as staff that I facilitated, because there was a big breakdown around, and that was about a 9-month process, because it was getting people to agree to the meeting in the first place. I mean, people agreed pretty quickly, having the meeting, having a second meeting, putting a work plan together, and then implementing that, checking in on it, and then coming back and coming at the end to actually agree that we were, that issue was put to bed. That happened once in the entire time of being here. I'm a community worker by background. That's my career. In 2010, when I found out about restorative practices, it was like a lot of things coming together, Dorothy. A lot of things just coming together that made sense. This was a framework that made sense for me. It brings lots of things together for me about how I want to be in the world, both as a person and as a professional. So I think I'm one of the luckiest people in the country in terms of the job that I have, because I get to do exactly what I want most of the time. But I get to do something I love. And I think I'm very, I know I'm lucky. I also think I worked very hard for it, but I think it all came together, you know.
George shared his experience of working in CDI, how it felt to be part of a restorative organization and the impact it had on his work and life.
I actually had a role as parent care facilitator previously, which was funded by CDI. So I returned to work in CDI when the restorative practices coordinator role became available. But this would be my first organization to be fully restorative to work in. And I suppose it's touching on what Claire said earlier about CDI becoming a restorative organization. It was about being explicit in the stuff that they were already doing. I suppose I would have considered myself probably a restorative person anyway. And the restorative practices training gives you the set of skills to live by. It's different in the way that I feel fully seen at work. You know, I can bring my actual true self to work. I feel safe at work as well, and to talk about anything. I don't think anything is off limits to bring to the table, you know. Claire spoke about our supervision sessions and the first question being, how are you? What's going on for you? You know, that check-in is so valuable. And it's a time where I feel safe that I can talk about anything that's going on for me that may impact my work. And we can work through it and talk about what needs to happen. And it's a great process, and it really helps you be your best self at work, you know, and be your best self personally as well. Claire's leadership skills do model being restorative on a daily basis. And I suppose that, again, just helps me be my best self and to live restoratively. The supervision sessions, yeah, the check-in, we check in quite regularly as well. Most days, actually, we would. And there is that space to, how are you? What's going on for you? You know, and again, that's just something that makes me feel safe and at ease. As well as, you know, during your supervision and your day-to-day work, I'm empowered to be accountable for my tasks, but supported as well. I can think about, you know, I suppose if there's an issue or problem, you know, it's always looked at as an opportunity to learn and for growth. You know, we would have a discussion on what needs to happen next, what went wrong. It's worked through very restoratively. Also, I think I remember one time in particular when there was an issue and Claire actually coached me through having a restorative conversation with someone. And that worked really well. And it was a process over time and checking in about how it went and learning from it. It's a great way to work and a great way to be. Yeah, I just think it's that phrase, if you love your job, you never work a day in your life, you know. It's something, it's a way of being, and I feel like it's helped me so much personally as well in my relationships. And at the end of the day, we all want to be our best self. And if you found something that can actively help you be that every day, it's golden, you know. It's just a very safe place to present problems and know that you can work through them in a way that there will be the best outcome will come from it, you know.
Lastly, we talked about restorative practice goals and priorities for CDI in the coming years.
Yeah, so we're going to expand our pool of restorative practices trainers nationally, with the hope of having a trainer in every part of the country to reach organizations and communities we haven't worked with before. We are going to expand our trainers in Tala as well, to have as many people trained up in Tala and make it a fully restorative community. We'll also be working with TUSLA. So the staff will have in-house capacity to embed RP as standard practice within the residential care settings, which is a really exciting piece of work. Currently, we have a lot of requests from schools. We're also currently working with the Professional Development Service for teachers, so they can expand their staff to have the capacity to deliver RP training in schools. We're also working to have RP as an accredited course, and will hopefully be delivered in most DTBs across the country.
Just to add to what George was saying about our plans for the coming period, I think it's really important to note that one piece of work that we were doing this year was a pilot project over in Blanchardstown, working with the guards and young Black Irish people over there and testing out the use of restorative dialogue circles to improve relationships between the guards and young Black Irish people. The evaluation report hasn't been published yet, but the indications are that the process was very helpful in that regard, and the guards are certainly very interested in it. We will be working with the guards and interested groups and relevant groups over the next few years to replicate that process for vulnerable young communities from the who don't traditionally have a good relationship with the guards, including the travellers, including migrant groups, including young working class people. And that's something that I think is going to be very powerful. I'm really interested in that piece of work. I'm very interested in all our work, but I think that's going to be a really good piece of work.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed our podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to our show.